Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. Mark Van Aken in shortly with first edition football news before the chief football writer for The Australian, Ray Gatt, joins us to review the season and make some predictions about the next few weeks. As always, Dean Hennessy will be in with his in-depth analysis and predictions of how the quarterfinals will play out, and we'll wrap up the first hour with one of the country's leading analysts, Craig Foster, to look through the Socceroos' third round World Cup draw. In the second hour, as always, we'll kick off with Mark's second edition news before Sydney FC's assistant coach Terry McFlynn faces the music about his club's season of A-League disappointment and talk about their chances of progressing beyond the final 16 of the Asian Champions League. And regular European correspondent Ben Sora Perez is in the UK and is going to jump on the line towards the end of the show to tell us what he's been up to. Fox Sports' Daniel Garb will go through all the Champions League action and the last few weeks of the Premier League before Mark wraps it up with stoppage time. G'day Edge, how's your week been, mate?
I've had a great week, and we've learnt where the Socceroos are going to journey in the third phase of 2018 FIFA World Cup Russia qualifications.
We got the bad side of the draw, didn't we?
We're gonna talk about that with Mark. We're going to talk about that with Fozzie later on. But, yeah, we learnt where that was a big week for me. But, obviously, A-League finals are here. Melbourne Victory, the form team, the pundits say, leading into tonight's match against Brisbane. We're all looking forward to that. That's going to be a cracker. But let's go to the news. Mark Van Aken.
I am back, and as you touched on there, Michael, the draw has been made, so meet the five nations the Socceroos will play in the final round of AFC 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers. 10 match days over 12 months, Rob and Michael. Our opponents include Japan, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Iraq and Thailand. Let's hear from the Socceroos boss, Ange Postecoglou.
Tough group, you know. Obviously, we've got Japan and Saudi Arabia, who are traditionally very, very strong. But even the up-and-coming teams, you know, Thailand, Iraq, and the other one's UAE. So, you know, we kind of know UAE had a very strong, you know, Asian Cup. And, you know, those kind of teams are always difficult for us. And we've got some travel in there as well. So, tough group, but we're ready for it.
What's important there, gentlemen, is our form in West. I think I'm touching this in the show last week or the week before. Our form in West Asia, where we've drawn, obviously, Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Iraq, is poor compared to our, relatively speaking, part of the world in East Asia. We've lost five times on the road in the west of the continent. We've never lost, including two trips to Japan, on the eastern side of things. And Japan, as we've even seen on the women's side of the ledger, with our Matildas just completely zonking them over there, they're not so strong at the moment. So... Look, it is the tougher of the two groups, but what I am loath to do is write this off as this like, group of death, whatever it might be. We're on the up. We've got the squad. We've got the coach. Let's just take it with two hands. Michael, what do you think?
Look, I think we'll play UAE, obviously, in familiar surrounds because they have training camps there all the time. Not really concerned about that one. You'd imagine Iraq, that's going to be at a neutral venue. That probably plays in our favour.
They actually play in Iran, I believe. Of all places at the moment, Iraq.
Right, well, that is interesting. Yeah, that will be really interesting to see where that develops. Maybe that's an away trip for us, Mark. Head off to Iran, that'll be a bit of fun.
Well, it's a funny thing, because a lot of the more adventurous travellers were bemoaning the fact we didn't score Iran. Everyone wanted to go to Tehran.
You guys would feel right at home. The Ayatollah Van Aken here might wear one of these...
I've been called worse things, Rob, let me tell you.
He gets, needs to get one of those hats, doesn't he?
Yes.
Anyway.
No, look, fantastic opportunity for the Socceroos to... show that we're champions of Asia and take it all in our stride. I take Mark's point about West Asia, but I just think UAE is not a daunting place to get.
Yeah, I agree with you. They should be worried about us. We're at the point now where we've got to stop worrying about them. We've got to go over there with a job to do and get the job done.
Where it becomes problematic, and we saw that with Jordan. They've beaten us twice in the last 4 years. In Jordan, they've come here, albeit with a coach with a fairly...
They bring their cousins over here.
With old Ari, with a pretty defeatist attitude. We beat them, was it 6-0? I'm trying to forget now. 3 weeks ago.
5-1.
5-1. We absolutely shellacked them. So I think the difference is you go to the Middle East, it can be trying, it can be hot, it can be a little bit troubling. They come here, we've obviously got great facilities, all that sort of stuff. So it can be a bit different. Anyway, it's a May, after being drawn with Australia in the final round of qualification for the third time in succession on Tuesday, Japan's representative in Kuala Lumpur was both shocked and not surprised. It is amazing that we have Australia again, said Masahiro Shimoda, Japan's national team director, with a laugh. The New South Wales government has committed to a $1.6 billion stadium redevelopment in Sydney, which includes plans to transform ANZ Stadium into a permanent rectangle by 2019, reports Basil Saab in the Fairfax Press. Now, I'm going to read all this, guys, because this is really important, and I think you might touch on this later in the show with Ray Gatt from The Australian. The funding also includes the redevelopment of Western Sydney Wanderers' home ground, Pirtek Stadium, which will be rebuilt in the next 3 years. But what's important here, Rob, and you're a Sydney sider from the origin, the big battle here was Sydney FC, which is obviously our team in mm-hmm. terms of football. Sydney Roosters, the old Eastern Suburbs, and the Waratahs were lobbying very hard for Allianz Stadium, a.k.a. the SFS, to not be rebuilt but simply refurbished. They've won the battle in the last few days. ANZ will be turned into a rectangular stadium out at Homebush. Pirtek rebuilt from scratch. The SFS only refurbed. So finally, we've got some surety with Sydney FC not being left homeless for up to 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah, there are a number of plans on the table. Surely $1.6 billion across all these stadiums, the spend is sufficient to turn them into world-class facilities for the modern era, for the next 20, 30, 40 years even. So hopefully that'll be the case, and we'll talk to Ray Gatt about it after the break. So Ray Gatt is after the break from The Australian, the chief football writer. Mark, we'll talk to you later in the show.
No worries, boys.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We've had most of Australia's top football journalists on the show since we kicked off 6 months ago. And tonight, we're joined by one of the top men we haven't got to yet, Ray Gatt, chief football writer of The Australian. Welcome to Box for the first time.
Thanks for having me, Rob and Mike.
And even though I see you around the media boxes, Ray, it's been quite a few years since we graced the hallowed turf of the cricket pitches playing for the Fairfield Patrician Brothers old boys team.
Yeah, that's a long time. Oh, mate, a long time ago. We were brilliant players in our own mind.
Outstanding, weren't we, mate?
Yeah, so. We were. We could have played for Australia any day.
Mate, maybe in cricket, but not football, that's for sure. Hey, Ray.
No, exactly.
Mate, the season nearly gone, the A-League season. It's been one of the, well, probably the best A-League season since the format kicked off. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's been one of the, you're absolutely right. One of the tightest seasons. The Premier's plate wasn't decided until the last round of the season. We had 4 teams that could have won it. Yeah, it was fantastic for the competition. That's what you want to see in a salary cap competition. And it was fantastic. I mean, when the season first kicked off, there were a lot of doubts about it. The doubts about the marquees that were signed, doubts about a lot of the visa players that were signed, but a lot of them have stepped up, especially the visa players, and you only have to look at Perth Glory with Diego Castro and Melbourne City with Bruno Fornaroli. There's been 2 of the standout players of the season that brought a hell of a lot to the A-League, and it's been fantastic. Maybe the crowds are down a little bit, maybe the TV ratings are down a little bit, but all in all, mate, it's been a fantastic season.
We're going to talk to Terry McFlynn a little later on in the show about Sydney FC, but the success stories are the teams that have made the finals. How do you see this weekend's matches playing out, mate?
Yeah, look, I think the best ones tonight is Brisbane Roar against Melbourne Victory. Both teams outstanding. I think the 6 teams left in the comp, well, the 5 would be looking over the shoulders of Melbourne Victory because they're hitting form at the right time. Their last 4 weeks has been outstanding, not just in the A-League, but in the Asian Champions League. And, they're a team to be feared, but unfortunately, either them or the Roar are going to bow out tonight. So it's a tough one.
It'd be an injustice if Brisbane missed out, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would be. And you know what? It's probably an injustice to the Victory missed out. Look, Brisbane have been fantastic. John Aloisi has done a great job with them. A lot of doubts about him at the start of the season, and the Roar, to be honest, because they had a lot of issues with ownership, and they thought the FFA would have to take them back at the start of the season. But they've bounced back brilliantly. Yeah, they had a great run. They played good football, great entertaining football, scored a lot of goals. And Jamie McLaren, he's been outstanding. Brilliant. He's on the cusp of Socceroo selection. Tonight, it's going to be a great game tonight. And Melbourne Victory, they'll have Bessar Parisha in, and that adds another element to the game.
Lucky to have him back, mate.
Look, they are in a way. I thought the 2-week suspension was a little bit harsh. I just don't think that any of the Phoenix players should have been allowed anywhere near him while he was being treated. He'd had a head knock. He was having a concussion test. He was receiving medical attention, and as I say, there should have been no Phoenix players around, and the referee should have had total control of that, but he did lash out. He did serve a week, he missed the game, and I thought that would have been enough. But look, it's good to see him in there, because he comes up against his old club back at Suncorp, where he was a god for three seasons, and he's no doubt going to get a very, very warm reception from the Raw fans.
Warm, yeah, that's one way to describe it.
Yeah.
Ray, who's the club that you think's done the best, considering their circumstances? Has it been Perth's amazing run after that terrible start to the season? Has it been Brisbane Roar, who's been top of the table for most of the year? Has it been Melbourne City? You know, they've got an incredible squad of entertainers. Who, in your opinion, watching the game as closely as you do, which is the club that you think has done the best this year?
Look, you know what? It's a toss-up between Brisbane Roar, Adelaide and Perth Glory. Roar, as I explained, they had such a tough start of the season, a lot of doubts about their future, and it wouldn't have been good for the players to have to work under those circumstances. You know, they didn't know whether they were going to get paid or whether the club would still exist. We had Adelaide, who were running last after eight rounds, 3 points, and bottom of the table, and then they go on that brilliant run. And then you had Perth Glory, who had to fight back from last season's disaster, where you know they were fighting for the Premier's plate at one stage, and then they lost all those points, or they were kicked out of the finals because of the salary cap issue. Then they had a slow start to this season, and then they went on a magnificent run of 10 games, 10 wins out of their last 12 games. So toss up between the three, but I think Perth Glory, maybe, because it would have been so devastating to be in the finals last season, then kicked out three or four weeks before the finals. That club could have fallen apart. But they've bounced back, and good luck to them. I wouldn't begrudge them winning the title either, to be honest.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're listening to Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. We're talking to Ray Gatt, Chief Football Writer of The Australian. And isn't it good that we're actually talking about football after some of the dramas that occurred throughout the course of the season?
Oh, exactly, Rob. I mean, you know, the fan issue with the Wanderers and what happened in the media with all the 95 people being named in shame, that was terrible. And the way that FFA actually handled that in the first place, it wasn't a good look. And look, that the game bounced back. It's had a terrific second half of the season, and we've only been totally concentrated on football, which is great. And long may it continue.
A couple of off-field matters that we should ask you about, Ray, because we know you're in the loop. Obviously, no head of A-League at the moment. Obviously, that recruitment process is still underway. Be interesting to see where that lands, won't it?
It will be. A few names being tossed about. Prominently is Peter Philopoulos, who's done a great job at Perth Glory. He's a highly credentialed administrator. I think he was involved at Etihad Stadium. He's been involved in a few AFL clubs.
That's right.
He was involved in Swimming Australia, and now he's at Perth Glory. He's been around, and he's a football man as well, because he used to be the CEO of South Melbourne in the old NSL days. So he's a football man at heart, and we'll see his credentials and what he's done with Perth Glory, turning them around. So I believe he's the front runner at this stage. I understand he's been spoken to several times by the headhunters. So. Yeah, I'd be surprised if he's not the man for the job.
Interesting. That would be a great loss for Perth, but probably a win for the game overall. And the other one, yesterday, obviously, an amazing announcement for Rectangular Sports in Sydney, and in particular, the football, our code, football is going to benefit. What's your take on the $1.6 billion announcement, what it means for our game?
That's fantastic with ANZ now being Rectangular. And look, it's just not our game, is it? It's rugby league and rugby union going to benefit as well. But, I think we might see a more high-profile World Cup qualifiers at ANZ. And, and it's good to see Allianz is going to get a facelift as well, and it's needed. They're not going to be torn down. And, Sydney FC, the Roosters and the Waratahs aren't going to be badly affected. I think it's win-win for everyone.
And what about Ange's comments the other day about after the draw. We've covered the draw extensively in our opener, and we will do a little later on in the show. But he demanded quality stadiums, quality surfaces for the upcoming World Cup qualifiers. Is that a shot in the dark? Will people be listening? We've seen some pretty ordinary surfaces in recent times.
We have, and it's a tough call because the stadiums at the moment are shared by any number of codes, and it's a matter of timing. You know, if you're playing it at the right time when the other codes are playing, then you're more of a chance to get a good surface. But, I think it's probably wishful thinking on Andrew's part. But, look, soccer is a brand of football that's exciting, and they need a good surface to play on it. But, you know what, I think they're good enough to be able to handle anything that's thrown at them.
And what's your opinion about it, Sydney FC? Will there be any significant change there, Ray, or do you think they'll just work through the playing roster and look to get new players in rather than attack any of the coaching or backroom staff?
Yeah, look, I think Arnie's safe. I think he's got enough credits on board after last season. And look, let's be honest, I think Sydney FC actually overachieved last season to make the grand final. Yeah, you know, Arnie's first season, and he would have been feeling his way. This season was obviously a disaster, started falling apart when the ACL started, but I think there were signs before that there were issues there, and I think you'll see a fairly big clean out next season, probably 7 or 8 players, and Arnie will certainly be under a bit of pressure next season to produce results, and I think he's going to need to really look at his foreign players, the visa players he brings in, and hopefully they'll get a very good marquee because they need a decent striker, and they need a name player in the squad to bring the fans back as well.
Yeah, they sure do. That Sydney sporting market notoriously fickle, and Sydney FC is the team that set the agenda in the early days and throughout the course of the A-League's brief history with the big names.
Yeah, you're right. Sydney are a benchmark, and there's a lot of expected of them, especially by their fans. If they're not winning, then the fans will normally turn on them. So, yeah, let's keep fingers crossed that it's a lot better season for Arnie and the team next season, because the A-League needs a strong Sydney FC.
No, dead set, no doubt about that. Now, before we go, one final question. Prediction for the grand final. Who's going to contest it? Who's going to win?
I think the Wanderers are going to be in the grand final, and I think they'll win it, and they'll probably play... I think they'll probably play Adelaide.
So Wanderers Adelaide grand final. We won't ask you for a score, mate. I think you've gone far enough out on a limb for us. Ray Gatt from The Australian, thank you so much for joining us on Box to Box. We'll look forward to having you back on the show next time.
Great talking, Rob and Mike. Thanks.
Dean Hennessy with his preview of the finals coming up next.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
And for 27 rounds, he's been one of the best pundits in the country on the A-League. Now we're going to put our man to the test in the finals. Former Notts County man and 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, Dean Hennessy. He strolled back into the studio. What a final round it was last weekend, mate.
Unbelievable. We couldn't ask for any more than that.
It was just drama upon drama, expectation, failure, and then Adelaide finished on top.
Look, it was incredible. And, you know, you've got to take your hats off to the Premier's plate, the champions, Adelaide, a comeback from bottom.
Yeah.
Where, you know, after 8 rounds, we didn't know where they were going to go. There was talk of, you know, the coach had changed. Mm. But then they just went on this unbelievable run, along with Perth, and we've obviously got to give credit due with them because they've absolutely brought themselves back into the fold. But to go and win it from there, I don't think that'll ever be done again.
How did City bottle it on Friday night?
It's a concern because it's not just on Saturday night. They've actually gone...
Last 2 weeks, I mean.
2 weeks, yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, they've gone to Perth where the pressure's on. If they get a result in either game, it changes the dynamics. As we know, everyone swapped places on the last round. And it
Rob,
was...
you asked that question as if you were surprised that Melbourne City bottled it last Friday night.
I know, we do talk about it. I shouldn't be surprised, should we? Because every time we expect them to do well, they don't. They're the Arsenal of the A-League, aren't they?
I actually thought you were going to refer to the fact that I picked Adelaide.
Oh, no, we didn't hear that, did we? No, we did, because we both got messages. We both got phone calls. He was at his niece's 21st, and he takes time out from his family to ring us up just to remind us that he tipped Adelaide.
I was going to hide behind the fact that my memory is starting to go now, but I actually do vaguely remember getting certain updates from a certain Mr. Edgley.
We can have a bit of fun about that, but Adelaide were super. They really would. And I think we reflected on just how well they were organised. Mm. And defences do win championships, and it's got on the Premier's plate, no doubt about it.
And on the flip side of that, they play some good football. You know, you don't go on that run. You don't come back from the dead, I guess, and come back and win the Premier's plate. It's an unbelievable achievement. And they've got to take a lot of positivity going into the finals now. I don't think they're going to be scared of anyone and whoever they get drawn and whoever comes to play them in Adelaide next week. So, but I suppose most probably the focus now comes on very much the two games this week.
Well, tonight's game is probably the one that's most interesting because the pundits are saying that Melbourne Victory are hitting form at the right time of the season.
Yet, they've got Bissouma Richard back.
But form, you know, when it comes to finals, form often is the main determinator. And
determinator, that's a new word.
It is.
Is that Arnold Schwarzenegger style?
It is. It is. Well, the determination is form. And all I can say is that it'll be hard not to pick Brisbane in Brisbane.
Look, it will, and if you look at the notes, because we obviously do the notes and we do our research each and every week, but I've changed them this week because it is finals. It's not about, you know, what the league programme looks like and there's a win, a draw and a loss. It's really who's going to deal with the pressure of a final. And I guess that's where I think Victory do have an advantage coming in. I think having Carl Valeri back is a massive, you know, he's done the first 30 minutes, then he's done 60. Can he go and run out 90 minutes? He was very, very good last week. I watched him Saturday night. Victory, you know, with a lot of players out, were well organised. They defended well. Brisbane will be kicking themselves because there was opportunities.
They know that they couldn't beat a second-string Brisbane team.
And Lawrence Thomas, we've just got to highlight
immense.
That. Unbelievable. I mean, I remember a few years ago thinking, well, I don't know if this boy's going to kick on to the big strand. You know, he was in the NPL with Bentley and he was all right. And you're thinking, yeah, he's not too bad. But I never, ever thought I'd see a performance not only last Saturday night live, but also in midweek in the Champions League. He was immense there. The save he made, I mean, it looked in and what a save. I mean, he kept them in it. So I think now with the experienced players back, and I think, this, you know, we talked earlier about off-air about Berisha coming back, but I think he might have been rested anyway, irrespective of whether he was suspended. They most probably would have gone in with a similar lineup with Georgie Howard, and they had nothing to play for because it would not change the outcome. And I thought it was a real big win for them in the sense of a draw.
But Ray Gatt mentioned in our opening segment the warm welcome, somewhat ironically, I think, that he's going to get when he turns up at Suncorp Stadium. He's got to maintain his emotions at an even level, and for Bissouma Richard, you just question at times whether he's capable of doing that.
Yeah, look, you don't know what you're going to get with Besh. I mean, he is an interesting character and he brings life to the competition, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and where Formaroli does it in a different style, he brings a totally different style again to the A-League. But I think Victory are much better when he's in the team. He does occupy the two central defenders. Nobody wants to play against him, you know, because he'll never leave them alone. He does bring people into the game and he scores goals. You know, he's the second top goal scorer in the league behind Formaroli. Third place behind Jamie McLaren, should I say. And I think, look, I looked at Jamie last week. There was a couple of half chances, but they blocked them out. And I thought they defended well. And I think if I'm going to look at Brisbane, I think that they need to get out more from Broich. I mean, Broich has got to really... He didn't do anything last...
He's dropped off.
He has dropped off a lot. And he has got the experience. He's won the A-League. He knows what finals is about. He has to bring that A-game this week because they need a lot of assistance in creating chances for Jamie.
Brisbane have never lost a playoff game at home in the history of the A-League finals.
Oh, look, and I think that's their experience. I said, but I think you're still coming up against the champions, and they're in a good vein of form. They're doing well in the Champions League. Their league form has been better right at the back end of the season. So as much as, yeah, they've never lost one, sometimes you look at that and go, well, the history is history. You know, there are different managers, different playing staff. I think you've got to look more, and this is why we're not looking at what happened in the last 6-7 weeks. It's what's happened in the last maybe 1 or 2 weeks. And Victory... With the Valeri factor, I think their leader's back, and it makes a big, big difference. And then when you then sprinkle that with the boys who've had a rest,
that's a big comment. Carl Valeri back, he really organised that team last weekend, didn't he? They just seemed to be under control. They had their heads together. He marshalled the troops, and when he came off, eventually after around 60 minutes, I think.
Yeah,
it
he
was,
did 60
so
minutes.
Standing ovation.
And it was great for Stefan Nigo next to him. He'd played well, and he pulled his strings, and you know he would have learnt a lot from that with that experience. But bringing him back, and then the fresh legs, all the boys who didn't play, you know, were rested for that. They come in fresh. You know, they've had a good week on the track, and I suppose it's going to come time to what we've got to predict. And
that's true, because we've got to leave some time for the City-Perth match, and we do want to make some observations on Adelaide and Western Sydney, who will be backing up next week. So, bold prediction this week. No sitting on the fence, no time for sitting on the fence, because there's going to be a result no matter what.
Well, the last time these two met up there at Suncorp, they got a smashed victory, and victory won't let that happen a second time. I think there'll be goals. I've predicted in my notes 2-2. Could go to extra time.
Well, if it is 2-2, it will go into extra time.
But if there's going to be a winner, I'm going to take victory just on experience. And, you know, I think it was a big, big sign last week with an understrength side on paper to get a 0-0 draw when there was so much. I don't know if you saw the reaction from the assistant coach, my mate.
I did. Yeah? I did. He was very
my
upset.
My mate Ross and I played together, and he wasn't very up as that water bottle flew through the air.
Well, so obviously, it was a huge
course,
loss
disappointment,
for them, wasn't it?
Massive.
Look, I've got to say, I've got to respect Brisbane's 14 wins this season. I think their form has been at a high level for the entire year. And I think at home, albeit I hear what you say, Dino, at home, I think Brisbane's going to get up.
I'm predicting Brisbane in penalties.
Penalties?
Yeah, I think it's going to go all the way. I think it'll be an exciting match. It'll be a scoring draw. Penalties to...
And Berisha to miss his penalty? Could we go as far as that or not?
Oh, mate, wouldn't that be ugly if that happened?
Well, that's an interesting... It's going to be a great game, so I'm looking forward. And it's only an hour or so away, so that's brilliant. Hey, let's turn our attention to Sunday's fixture at Amy Park.
Odd timing, Edge. Why is it on Sunday afternoon?
I would have preferred for this game to be Saturday night. 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. I'm not sure that's the greatest of scheduling. However, it is what it is. But... it's going to be a challenge for Perth, you would think. Rob, obviously we talked about City bottling against Adelaide last week, but Perth lost 4-0 to Sydney FC, who've been a little bit challenged for form, and they've got to come over to Melbourne now and play. So it's going to be a very difficult journey for Perth.
Yeah.
After what's been an amazing run, 11 wins in 13 games, I think it is. So... they will enter the game against Melbourne City on Sunday in Melbourne with a bit of doubt, I would think.
They had a short turnaround, though, and that's got to go some way to justifying what happened. And they had travelled a lot. Admittedly, they're going to have that extra day this time around. Dino, will it make enough difference for them to beat the City outfit at home?
I think you could look at it two ways. Both teams got beat last week, you know, obviously City losing at home to Adelaide and then Perth losing to Sydney. But I think if you go back the week before, I think that's where the real significant result was, where Perth won 3-2 but absolutely battered them for a long, long period of time. Then you add in that at home, and then you I think Perth have been good away. Perth have had a really good away once they got going in their season, apart from, you know, the defeats, and it was quite a heavy defeat.
And Kenny Lowe will get them back.
And Kenny will get them back. And they've still got those quality players. And Navillo will be missing. So that's going to be a factor, where they've relied on the three.
He's now played his last game for City, surely.
Well, they are appealing, and I haven't heard any updates yet if that appeal's been met. But I think, you know, it depends on how that outcome dictates whether he plays or whether, bottom line is, depends on how the result goes. I mean, based on that, I mean, might be, if they're knocked out, there's nothing to talk about. So I think Perth's form going in with that long streak of winning and being confident and coming from nowhere with Castro and Keogh, I still think Perth's got a massive chance against a team that's now starting again to leak goals. You know, they're 5-2, where that's where we all thought Melbourne City had turned the corner, because they had that great run where they were not conceding, really hard to beat. And all of a sudden they start leaking goals, and then you go down the other end. And I think Perth, I've got a feeling Perth can still win this, even though it's in Melbourne.
So is it a feeling or a prediction?
No, it's a prediction. I think Perth or win there. Again, if the only way they'll do it is if they keep former Oli quiet, mm-hmm. and obviously deal with Moy, because they're the two main focus now without Novillo that they'll drive through. But they've got some real good form coming in outside of last week, and some teams have a blip. You know, it's just one of those things.
I'm going to go against you again, mate. City, 3-1 for me in regulation.
Yeah, I find it hard not to pick Melbourne City, although they've disappointed me this year, Melbourne City. I think out of all the lists that are in the league, I think they have the best list. And, you know, if I was a Melbourne City fan, I'm not sure I'd be happy with a fourth place finish with the calibre of firepower they've had. And your point is right. The only doubt I have about Melbourne City is the defence and leaking goals.
Well, you think about championship sides all around the country.
Yeah, defence.
Sorry, all around the world, mind
yeah,
you.
Defence, yeah.
And they generally are one of the better defending teams in the league as a general rule.
And they've probably got one of the best goalkeepers in the league.
And they have. And, you know, and I thought Wilkinson was a big factor coming in, and he settled the ship. But even, like, the game in Perth, I mean, I couldn't believe how one-sided it was. So I think they'll take a lot of that. They'll just talk about last week was a blip, you know, we got beat and Sydney had nothing to play for, so they play with a bit of freedom with no pressure. And
I think Melbourne City will score enough.
Yeah, well, some people think that Melbourne City think that defence is what they put around the pitch to keep the spectators off the ground. But that's another point altogether. Dino, it's been fantastic, mate. We've heard your predictions. We'll talk to you next week, find out how accurate you were, and then we'll do it all again for the knockout semi-finals ahead of the final.
Thanks, Rob, and thanks, Edge.
Next, SBS's top football man, Craig Foster.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. And we've had a few debutants on the show tonight, but none bigger than our next guest, former Socceroo Craig Foster. He's the voice of SBS football, hard-hitting opinion writer with the Sydney Morning Herald, and when the hard words have to be said about the game in this country, he's the go-to man to say them. Great to have you on the show, Craig.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that, but I'm not sure if the title suits me. I could never get Box to Box.
Oh, you did okay in your day, going up down the pitch, Craig. Come on, we're old enough to remember.
I can only do half at a time.
Hey, mate, look, thank you so much. And, you know, well, hopefully we're going to go from one end of the world of football to the other over the next 12 months. From September to September, we're going to be traversing Asia in every backwater we can possibly find. Some say this is the difficult side of the draw. Ange is a man with his own opinions and has expressed them already. What are yours?
Oh, I think it is the more difficult side. That's true. But of course, you know, being Asian champions and being, you know, having great preparation today, I think the team's in a fantastic position. I think Sam's done a great job there, as everyone acknowledges. So it's something that we expect to be traversed, if not comfortably, still in a straightforward way. But we would prefer this side of the door because we have to be prepared. And I think that's been a great change in mentality in the last few years, is it's not to avoid opponents, it's to take opponents on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen that even, great credit to Ange in the early times, you know, go play Belgium, go play Germany. You know, I love that attitude. And because what all they're going to do is strengthen you. So instead of, you know, standing in a corner as Australia and saying we're not going to play these teams, by the time you get to the World Cup, it's far too late. And don't forget these days, of course, we don't have all of our players playing in the Champions League. We don't have five guys playing at Bayern Munich as Germany do, or seven. So it's through the internationals that we play is our only real opportunity at the moment to strengthen the quality that we have in that arena. If you get back to 2006, most of that team were playing at tremendous levels of the game. We don't have that right now. So that makes our internationals more important. Therefore, you know, Angela approached it in the right way, that we'll, you know, continue to play in the same manner, learn lessons against more complex teams, and ultimately, you know, we're all confident we will get through. And by the time we get to Russia, the team will be battle-hardened because of this draw. So I think it's excellent.
Craig, obviously there's been an evolution of the sport in our country, our sport, football. With that, there's been an evolution of the Socceroos brand. And I'm sensing for the first time since I've been following the sport for 30 years that the expectations of the football community of the Socceroos in terms of how we perform, how we play, and the type of approach we take into international fixtures is never been greater. And the reason I ask you about this is, mm-hmm. can you reflect on the journey that Ange has had? Mm-hmm. We were, you know, obviously back in the days of Gus Hiddink and Pim Verbeek, we mm-hmm. celebrated wonderful achievements in getting to the World Cup, but we didn't achieve as much as we should have. Now, do you have confidence that this manager and his approach will stand us in greater preparation for achieving something at the World Cup?
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's the right approach for long term. I mean, I've been, you know, banging on for the last 15 years, I guess, since I retired, about, you know, how we all think Australia should play. And it was a conversation. And so I've seen the change in the game, as you said, use the word evolution. You know, 10 years ago, it was a difficult conversation to have. And people weren't really ready for it. And they used to say, oh, you're negative. And, you know, because under Verbeek, actually, we qualified very comfortably, but we were playing like rubbish. And the thing about it was, you know, some of us always believed that we had to play in a way that has long-term goals, only not just immediate goals. And that's what we're doing now. That's why, you know, I love it. I'm so supportive of it because it has been a long time coming. I mean, even in Germany, I got in a lot of trouble when I talked about Australia just playing in a very weak manner and not taking the national approach that we do in all sports. And I could never see why that should be allowed. You know, that was a big issue at that time. I think partly because people weren't really ready for that discussion. It used to be, well, you either support the Socceroos or you don't. And if you say negative things about them, you must be anti-Socceroos. And we've come a very, very long way from then. And quite often, when you talk about football, because the passion, and I've seen that of being in a media career, you know, the passion is intense. It's a cycle that quite often has to happen. You need to have hard discussions. There's always a big blowback. Everyone gets upset, blah, blah, blah. And then you just navigate through it, keep going. And ultimately, 3-4 years later, you see the change. And we've seen that in a lot of aspects of the game. The Socceroos are another great example. I always believed that, and the same as with Matildas, that we need to play in a particular manner that suits us, that suits our players, in particular suits our mentality. Two aspects, the mentality and the team ethic. So most countries in the world lack a team ethic. I mean, everyone knows Dutch are the great example. But most of them at some point come together, and it takes the actual coach to bring most national teams together. But for ours, it doesn't, because that's our sporting psyche, that's our national psyche. So it has to be a team approach. It always has to be an aggressive attacking approach. So all those things now, and just ticking those boxes. So look, I couldn't be more delighted.
You're with Rob DeGilt. Pardon me, you're with Rob Gilbert and Mike Ledgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Craig Foster, SBS analyst. You sound like you fully expect us to negotiate this rough passage of qualifying through phase three and not have to rely on a third place playoff spot.
I do. Mind you, it's nice to have it there, but just as a fallback if necessary. But no, I fully expect it to, because the team's in a very good position. I'm not sure that the other teams are in a similar position. We know that away from home can be difficult. The things, you know, in a particular way of playing that we have at the moment, of course, we can be vulnerable on the counter-attack. That's just a fact of that style of play. That's always going to be the case in future if we're going to play in aggressive fashion. So we accept that. But now this is going to be a bit more difficult. Jordan, of course, were able to beat us doing just that. So we're going to have to be really careful of that. It'll be interesting to see how the coaching staff manage the different level of quality against us. But we have the ability to get through. The other factor is, of course, that we are so extremely strong at home that you are close to impenetrable at home. And Australia always has been. That's not just the last couple of years. I mean, we all remember the famous game back in 1988, the Bicentennial Cup against Argentina. And if you go through Australia's historic results at home in front of our own crowd, in our own climate, Australia is, even against Japan, our results have been absolutely outstanding. So, you know, for all those reasons, we can be very confident.
Craig, we might ask you while you're here to take off your media hat and put on your interim chairman of the PFA hat for a moment. It's a good opportunity to reflect on some change that's happened at the PFA of recent times. Obviously, your CEO has departed. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us an update on the organisation? There was media reports of a fair bit of disgruntlement post the collective bargaining agreement that was reached. Mm-hmm. Can you just let us know on what's the status of the organisation and how you're going?
Yeah, look, the thing about a union environment, and I've been there for pretty much 20-odd years, is that the highest for what you want is the players and the people within the movement, as I would call it, is because it's a passion, it's a cause, not just to support players and protect players. And people often hear about the CBAs, which is the conditions and the protections and remuneration, all those factors. But for us, it's as much about the game. The players love the game implicitly. We want to see the game protected, and we want to see the best for the game and the game managed in the best way. And sometimes the best way we can do that is by pushing conditions through. So it's not just about the players. It's always been about the bigger picture and the passion we have for that. So within that context, the highest form of engagement that you can have from a group of players is ownership. And now, ownership at some points can become a really strong influence, and that's what happened. Players feel so engaged and so much ownership in the PFA that they started to say, look, we're not happy with some of these things that have been done. And I think that's fantastic. So I came into them saying, that's great that you feel so strongly about it, that you want your association run in particular ways. So I came in to run a review, and, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Adam did in many respects a fantastic job, but has moved on now. And so we're in the market currently looking for a CEO. It's a difficult role. We've had some fantastic people who have put themselves forward. I think the game is changing, and so the PFA has to also progress and modernise in the sense that we had some marvellous, magnificent CEOs. Brendan Schwab is legendary. He's actually now running the world's global union from Switzerland, so of genuine international world quality. But they were, it was not well financed in those years. They weren't well supported. They had a huge role and did a fantastic job. Now we need, I think, more strategic. We need more support within the organisation. So there's a number of factors there which are coming out in the review. We've done a survey recently to all the player groups. Feedback is quite brilliant. You know, they love it. They love the fact that the PFA speaks on their behalf. They love to have an organisation that advocates for them all the time. The final thing I would say to you, though, is we're at a stage now, and I've spoken to David Pellop and et al. Recently about this issue, and after 25 virtually years of the PFA, most of the progress that has been made in the game between the players and the game has been through struggle and conflict, and it's time we got beyond that. And I think some other sports have been able to do that. So, for instance, the Matildas dispute last year was necessary for the Matildas. They're a magnificent group. I love them, and they had to do it. So I support them. But it's sad that they had to.
Yes.
So we need to get the game to the point where everyone accepts that the well-being of the players and the better conditions they can have, the better remuneration that we can have, reflects well on the game, because we're not growing unless that's happening.
Yep.
And once we accept that, we can then take that on board and have more of a partnership paradigm.
Hey, mate, look, Craig, thank you for being on the show. We're looking forward to hopefully having you back again in the future and talk to you a lot more about the Socceroos' journeys over the next couple of years as we hopefully get to Russia 2018.
Pleasure. Thanks, guys.
So, Edge, what did you make of Fozzie's views on the PFA? Is it going to work out as easily as he makes it sound it will?
He sounded like it was a pretty a rosy sort of environment, the PFA, but they've had a lot of conflict. I think that the proof in the pudding will be whether they can get on with the FFA and they can actually undertake their business behind closed doors without all the stress and strain that last CBA negotiations undertook. For me, that's the test. But more importantly, what did you think about Fozzie's comments that he's just expecting us to sail through qualification?
Yeah, look, I think, I don't know whether what he said we're going to sail through. He expected us to get through. So that's what I liked. I liked the optimism, the expectation. And as we talked about earlier on in the show, I think it's one of those situations where we've got to expect our team to do well and others to fear us. So that's what I liked about it. Next up, we've got Terry McFlynn after the break. Daniel Garb, stoppage time. It's all going to happen in the next hour of Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edge.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box to Box, and we'll get into second edition football news shortly with Mark Van Aken before Sydney FC's assistant coach Terry McFlynn talk about his club's season of woe. Ben Soro Perez is in the UK, and we're going to chat to him before the end of the show. But again, we've got one of the best in the business to cover the European action, Fox Sports' Daniel Garb, before we wrap it all up with stoppage time. Mark, what did we miss the first time round? What I haven't missed since you walked in the studio, however, is the lovely fragrance of the Live Bravely with Diesel, Only the Brave fragrance you purchased at Chemist Warehouse on the way in.
I'm glad you noticed that, Rob.
Mate, usually you come in smelling of KFC, Red Rooster, grilled burgers.
But I might have had Red Rooster on the way in. They're not a show sponsor, Rob. No cash for comment. Can I get a free chicken burger next week? No, no. It's one of the Hemsworth brothers promoting that particular fragrance.
That's right.
Mark, just to change the subject for a moment, we spoke in the first news edition about the stadium redevelopment for New South Wales government.
And that was a very clunky break into.
No, but I wanted to get this out.
What a great segue.
I wanted to get this out because Mark has got a long history with ANZ Stadium. I wanted to ask him, do you reckon out of the $1.6 billion they've allocated to this development fund, do you reckon they'll hire a turf expert?
Well, that was my gag. You're supposed to leave me in. Yeah, look, it'd be great, Rob, if they could hire someone to maybe manicure the turf, especially if they're going to put a roof on the place, which I believe is going to happen. So just to clarify, for ANZ Stadium, it is obviously built for the Olympics back in 2000. What's interesting, too, if I can skip forward, where are my notes?
And while you're searching, we talked to Ray Gatt in the opening hour about this stadium deal that the New South Wales government has announced. So this is a little more detail on that subject.
Interesting, Mark.
No, but something we didn't touch on with Gatty earlier on, this comes amongst the news that the MCG could host the NRL Grand Final after the Victorian government launched a sensational bid to uproot the game from Sydney. The New South Wales government on Thursday, and in fact yesterday, as we said, a $700 million plan. Now, I know that's got nothing to do with football, but what is very interesting is that the Victorian government making that move in lieu, Michael, of actually trumping up to have Socceroos games in the sporting capital of the world.
Well, we've spoken about that. We think the Victorians were asleep at the wheel when they probably made an evaluation on the Socceroos games versus the trumped-up friendlies that are the International Champions Cup.
Especially now, the draw has come out. We've got some compelling games coming up over the next 15 months or so, because you can't compare, you know, if you're going back on the games before, you're comparing apples with pears. Anyway, moving on, what's interesting is that the Victorian government said, we're going to try and commit. I'm big on this, Rob, the stadiums and the crowds. Mm. Victorian government said, we can even get a world record crowd maybe to an NRL grand final, perhaps not realising that 108 or 109,000 turned up in 99 for my boys, the Storm.
107,999. I could there never work out why they couldn't add that last person there, but that was in the ANZ stadium.
I was there in the nether reaches.
Yeah, the change of configuration.
As Rabs would say, pre-configuration. He loves saying that every year. But anyway, the point being 107,000 for that, 109 turned up for a Bledisloe Cup game. So the MCG, as much as we love it in this part of the world, does not hold anywhere near that. So pull your head in. Moving on, if you've been under a rock, Melbourne Victory's bid to reduce Bess Arbrush's two-game suspension has been successful. Midweek, Berisha will now be available to play for the Victory in tonight's elimination final against Brisbane Roar at Suncourt Stadium, a place he's quite familiar with, Rob and Michael. Berisha, along with Victory officials, presented to an independent disciplinary committee via video link from Melbourne on Tuesday. The match review panel had initially proposed a two-game sanction on Berisha for the offence of assault on a player against Wellington Phoenix's Andrew Durante, who then came out after this, of course, a couple of days ago, calling Berisha, his words, not ours, a complete liar.
Yeah, well, Andrew Durant needs to pull his head in. He shouldn't have been there in the first place, regardless of whether the words attributed to him by Berisha are words he said or he didn't say. He should never have been anywhere near the place. I know Ray Gatt mentioned it. We talked about it last week. It was just outrageous. The referee, Ben Williams, should have been all over this. He was the epic fail on that night to me.
Aaron,
you said it, Mark. It wasn't violent conduct, so 2 weeks was harsh. Right decision. Let's get out there.
Okay. Aaron Moy has been hailed the best Australian midfielder in A-League era history by Mike Cockerell on Fox Sports during the week. Hard to argue, he's the best in his prime in the A-League. Maybe Mo back in the NSL or even Viduka. But is he the best guy we've seen playing in a national competition in Australia? Michael?
No way, no. Not as good as Viduka. Viduka was unbelievable in his early years playing for Melbourne Knights.
Yeah, okay. And Aaron Moy's got a
midfielder,
little bit to prove yet. He's got
keep
a career
in mind.
Ahead of him.
Yeah, Cockers is talking midfielder.
Yeah, he's talking midfielder. Look, I think Josip Abiskic, who played in the old NSL, was was a very good player.
That's plucking one out from the past.
A couple of things for Cocker. Look, I've created this monster because I started pulling out guys from the NSL era because I was talking Emo. Look, Emo came back and did some serviceable stuff for Sydney FC, but certainly his Olympic days before he went overseas. But to be fair to Cockers, who has been a semi-regular on our show, he was talking A-League
just
era.
Just in case anyone doesn't...
That's Mike Cockerell.
If he's talking A-League
Emo
era,
is Brett Emerton, of course. You referred to him as Emo three times without using...
I thought you were right about Cockers. Anyway. All good. Angry fans of seven-time European champions AC Milan have turned on club president Silvio Berlusconi for sacking Sinisa Mihailovic and appointing yet another coach with no top-level experience, according to Fox Sports. Mihailovic is just the latest innocent coach to pay for the mismanagement of the club, all with the complicit approval of President Berlusconi, a prominent supporters group said on Wednesday. Mihailovic, Milan's fourth handler in two seasons, was sacked on Tuesday and replaced by youth team coach Christian Brocchi after admitting he had failed in his mission to secure qualification to Europe's premier club competition. Milan, one of the toasts of Europe, last appeared in the competition back in 2014. That is very, very hard to believe, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is amazing. After the Rossonero had that glorious era over the 80s, 90s and into the early 2000s, one of the titans has fallen, and they brook nothing but success at that organisation. And, I mean, for God's sake, Berlusconi sacking people. That is the pot calling the kettle black, isn't it?
Will he be Trump's vice president, Michael?
I'd love
is he qualified?
He would be qualified to be Trump's vice president, no doubt about that. Hey, wouldn't they have great parties, though?
They would.
What do they call it?
We'd have great parties. We'd have the best parties.
Moving right along, please.
Moving, yes, exactly. Leicester, you took my next line, my segue line. Leicester City manager Claudio Ranieri is convinced his closest rivals, Tottenham Hotspur, will not give up easily and predicted a terrible last five games for his team, who continue their surge for a maiden Premier League title. Leicester, 7 points ahead of second place Tottenham, are three victories away from capturing their first EPL, or in fact just English top flight title, but Ranieri would not take anything for granted this week. It's not done yet, though. We're in the Champions League, but the last five games will be terrible.
Well, United.
I don't like that word, terrible. That's.
Oh, well, he's exaggerating everything. He's trying to take the pressure off. I think we've talked about this before, but I think Manchester United have done Leicester a big favour by pulling the rug out from under West Ham's feet at the final game at the Berlin Ground, the much publicised final game in that FA Cup replay. Surely a deflated West Ham turns up this week. And before we move on from that game, I do want to point out Marcus Rashford's goal. I know it's a little bit of a segue, but what a goal that was.
Hey, just talking to Claudio about Claudio
Ranieri. What a goal that was.
It was a great goal.
We're talking FA Cup then?
It was a super goal. Yeah. But Claudio Ranieri.
Ranieri.
Did you realise...
Call for me. Come on.
No, I'm not doing that.
Ranieri.
Did you realise his emotional state?
He's a skippy. Come on.
Did you realise his emotional state after last weekend's game against Sunderland? Did you realise why?
I'm sure you're about to tell us.
Well, he was in tears after the game, and did you realise why?
Tell us, Michael.
Well, if you had have looked
he'd just
into
been capsicum sprayed? I don't know what.
No, he hadn't been. No, no. He'd met an old lady who their family had brought up to Sunderland from Leicester because she wanted to see her team before she was likely to pass away, and he was just moved by the fact that... that there was a supporter of her age who was very, very sick, had made the journey, and he realised the significance of what he was had been achieving. And that was the reason why he was
so we thought you were going to joke, and that is a truly beautiful story.
It is. Yes. So good on him. Good on him.
It is. Very uplifting. Well, sort of uplifting story. I won't go into my next one, Rob. We'll save it for stoppage time. Just a little bit of anecdote. I've got my gigantic iPhone, which I picked up yesterday at Optus. And what was interesting, when I spent my your obligatory 45 minutes in there, I started asking questions about the EPL. I said, have you been getting many questions about the EPL? Yeah, a little bit. And actually, when the very, I've got to say, she was very helpful out at the store. There was a little, for the staff, there's a little login, and it said EPL questions, your EPL questions asked and answered. And I said, do you mind if I have a look at that? And she's like, okay, yeah. Not a lot there.
Nothing.
What did she say?
She said, okay. No, because I'd already told her I was.
But when you say there was not a lot there, what was there? What can you
not
remember?
A lot. It was like, it was just a Q&A.
You didn't use your new phone to take a screenshot of it or a photograph?
No, it wasn't big enough, my new phone. No, it was really, again, no info that we don't already know. Like, are we getting the EPL? Yes. Do we know how we're going to deliver it? Well, we're looking at many ways we can deliver the blah, blah, blah. So still nothing. If that's the info they're giving their staff, I'm getting worried.
Yeah. Absolutely. We should be worried. We should know. The season's almost over, and as we all know, the moment the season's over, the talk of the new season begins.
Well, put it in context, Euros are coming up. There's only 99 days, in fact, until the ICC comes to Melbourne with Atletico Madrid. Yeah. And who else is coming? Tottenham, Juventus. The victory, and Juventus.
What we do know that is in 4 weeks' time, we're going to get three beIN Sports channels. So that is what we do know.
And in fact, one last thing to close off on, Fox Sports yesterday, for the first time, have basically said, absolutely no way, because I guess some people were still hoping somehow that EPL would end up on Fox Sports, whether it be with an extra fee, whatever. Fox Sports, on behalf of Foxtel, said there is absolutely no way that it's going to be on Foxtel's platform next year. And they had another backhander at Optus saying the amount of money they've paid for the rights is obviously beyond the pale.
Good stuff, Mark. We'll get you back in stoppage time soon. We're going to have Ben Soroperez in as well. Next up, Terry McFlynn from Sydney FC to talk about the shocking season they've had so far and can they make something of it with their tilt at the Asian Champions League.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. On digital radio streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for us on TuneIn Radio. And one of the teams expected to do big things this year was last season's beaten grand finalist, Sydney FC. To say the 2015-16 A-League season has been a disappointment would be an understatement, but there's been a silver lining with the Asian Champions League tilt still alive. To go through the season that was 200-game man and foundation player with Sydney, assistant coach Terry McFlynn. Thanks for coming on Box to Box, Terry.
Hi, fellas. How are you?
And we've got Michael Edgley, my co-host, but your old mate Dean Hennessy, who I'm going to hit up next to say hello to you.
Hello, how are you, mate? You good?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good. Not too bad.
Good.
So, Terry, the season started with so much hope. You were beaten grand finalists after a fantastic season last year. You would have expected so much more.
Yeah, look, obviously, last season we got to the grand final after Graham Arnold and Andrew Clark. Joined the staff and myself after retiring and joined the backroom staff. So it was year one of a 3-year project for us. We had a plan in place, and in some respects we probably overachieved a little bit last season. So the expectations to go one better was high on us coming into this season. Obviously losing Mark Yenko in the off season for different reasons. When you lose 16 goals in a season, it's obviously going to impact you. Final third, and then losing Alex Brosk obviously to injury, the goals sort of dried up for us, and we drew 10 games over the course of the season, which if we turned two or three of them draws into wins, we would have been in the finals, and we'd have been sitting here on the eve of the finals looking forward to a game this weekend, but unfortunately it's not to be.
Now, there were plenty of talk during the season from all sorts of pundits. People like to make up stories, they like to use little bits of information, they like to exaggerate in the media. I'm sure there's no surprise to you there, mate. But there was talk about back office, at least player unrest within the club. What have you got to say to those who postulated that was one of the causes of the difficulties this year?
No, look, that's never been the case. I think over the course of the A-League, I think you look at teams that are underachieving by external factors and external people looking in, and you might see clubs are underachieving and they start throwing stones and seeing if there's any cracks. And I think what you saw from our playing group and from the coaching staff and the club as a whole, that we were solid. We knew the direction we were going, we knew where we wanted to go, we knew there was a few problems that we needed to rectify and address as staff, as players, as a club, and again they were all internal things that we're working through as a process at the minute, but certainly we never listen to any external factors. We're very clear on the vision of where we want to go and what we want to achieve. And as I say, this season was a disappointment. But again, we're going through the review process at the minute. And like I say, it's a very simple fact for us that we drew too many games.
Sydney FC fans say to me, Terry, how do you explain the discrepancy between what's been sparkling form in the Champions League and disappointing form in the league? How do you, as a person who's involved in the club on a day-to-day working through all the challenges that you face, how do you actually explain to the fans the difference between what's been great performances in the Champions League and, substandard performances in the league?
Oh, look, I think
the Asian Champions League throws up a different challenge. So it's a different environment. It's a different group of players that our players obviously have never faced before. I think in the A-League, you know, you play each team three times in the season, and you get to know every player in the league intimately if you've played in the league for a long period of time. So I think there's an initial adrenaline going into an ACL campaign. For us, it was the first away trip into Japan, to Urawa, for the first away game we lost, obviously. And then we won the last three. So for us, it's been a success so far, but the preparation and the attention to detail is the exact same from the coaching staff and from the playing group. We approach it, whether it's an A-League game, whether it's an ACL game. I just think it throws up another challenge for the boys on a bigger stage that, you know, some of them have never played before. And that was the message from us as a staff, that this was an opportunity for the players that, you know, some of them might never play for Australia. They might never represent the country, but this was an opportunity to represent Australia as a club team in Asia. And I think, especially some of the younger boys, you look at Brandon O'Neill and George Blackwood, you know, they've grabbed the opportunity with both hands. And for them as players, they'll get better for the experience. And for us as a club, we'll get better for having them. That experience will be valuable for them as well.
So how do you now manage the matches that are coming forward, because there's big breaks between matches? It must be an interesting construct that you're no longer playing regularly in the league, but you've still got to keep the guys at peak performance to front up to the future Champions League fixtures. And let's hope you go deep into the comp.
Yeah, look, we're very, very fortunate. It's in the city of Andrew Clark, head of sports science and strength and conditioning. He's the best that I've worked with in professional sport. We work off a periodization plan where every player plays the same amount of minutes across the board, whether they're in the first 11 or whether they're on the fringes. So we have consciously done that throughout the whole season, so that if any player was called on at any point during the season, he was ready to play. I think you saw that in the back half of the season with, you know, young boys like Riley Woodcock and Alex Mullen coming in to the A-League, making the debuts for Sydney FC against Adelaide in round 26 and holding their own. So we'll continue to do that. We'll set up in-house games, we'll set up friendly games. In the intervals in between games, we played basically what would be the Champions League squad against Perth in the last game of the season, bar Philip Olosko, obviously, as a marquee. He's not in the ACL squad. So that was a competitive game for the players. We don't play again now until the 20th of April, so we'll prepare them. They've had a couple of days off, back in tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday off, Monday, Tuesday, train as normal, play on Wednesday, and then the challenge is to facilitate a game in the 9-day turnaround till the 3rd of May till we play in Guangzhou.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Terry McFlynn, assistant coach at Sydney FC. Dean Hennessy, great mates. You go back a long way. Leap into this, will you?
Yeah, Terry, look, I think just to keep on with the theme, I suppose from your point of view as a player, and obviously played for all of those years and had a lot of success winning things for the club, what's the transition been like for you turning into a different role at the club and working with Graham Arnold?
Look, on a personal level, the transition was pretty seamless for me. I think Dina, you obviously know me intimately. So I've always been someone who's always prepared for the future and always planned for the future. And, you know, the type of player that I was, I had to work extremely hard every single day to get a spot in training, let alone a spot in the team. So,
yeah.
Well, you were the last man signed up with Sydney FC, famously, as Dino tells us.
Yeah, that's right. I could have ended up working with Dino. It would be all different.
Exactly right.
For me, it was, I was preparing for transition away from the football pitch for probably about 5 years leading into my actual retirement and transition across to the administration side and the coaching side of it. So for me, I had a lot of ideas and I had a lot of plans that I would like to continue to see grow and develop at the football club. And I'm just thankful for the football club for giving me that opportunity to continue my own football education at one of the biggest clubs in the country. And your question was twofold. To work with Arnie, it's a privilege to work with him every day. To tap into his fountain of knowledge and to hear some of the stories of the people he's worked with, obviously Gus Hiddink and Naiskins and all these world world names across football.
Big names.
Big names, and the knowledge that they obviously have, and for him to be able to, you know, to pick up the phone at 2-3 in the morning to Gus Hiddink, who's at Chelsea now, and tap into him and get an understanding of, we're in this situation, we're in this predicament, what would you do? And he shares that knowledge of us, and you know, we, as a coaching staff, we're very, very close, we're very tight-knit, we work very well together, from Graham Arnold, Steve Corriger, Andrew Clark, Doug Coors, our football analyst, Elias Bukharam, right down to Robbie Stanton, who's the MYL coach. So there's a real continuity of what we want to achieve at the football club, from bringing the kids through, because we ultimately, we know that football is a young man's sport, and for us it's about getting as many young kids, young Australian boys, into the first team as possible.
Brilliant. Now, just on another thing, you know, with the role of the ACL and what you've got coming up, can you just tell, you know, the guys here and the viewers will be listening about what you have to do and your role in the ACL?
Or the listeners that'll be listening.
Or the listeners.
Yeah, look, it was something that, like I said before, we planned, you know, we probably planned 3 to 4 months in advance of any one game. And we're already, you know, midway through the pre-season for next season, planning games and pre-season tours and everything. So once we qualified for the Asian Champions League, we sat down and came up with a plan in terms of how to give it our best shot, how to give the competition the respect it deserves, and see how far we can go as a football club, a salary cap football club in an unsalary cap competition, which is, in itself is a challenge. My particular role was basically identified as I would go a week before the team, set up the hotel, set up the training ground, logistically make sure everything was in place, from transport to making sure we had the right food at the hotels. We even played around with the idea of bringing our own chef. We've got our own chef at the training ground that cooks for the boys every day. So that was another idea that we played around with. Thankfully, after the draw in late November, we got a Japanese team, a Korean team, and a Chinese team. So a lot of the hotels we're staying in are westernized hotels. So the chef and the food and everything, which is a very, very important component for us in terms of preparation and readiness for the players. So yeah, I basically go a week in advance, set up the hotel, set up the training grounds, and just make sure that logistically everything's in place, that when the players arrive, they get straight off the plane, on the bus, straight to the hotel, and everything's seamless. There's no hanging around, or there's no waiting on buses to pick us up, or there's no... What we try to do is leave nothing to chance.
No, that's great. I mean, and I think that's where the game's come now. I think that's where in Australia, you know, we've advanced a long, long way. So I think, you know, that's a really good good benchmark that you've set.
Hey, Terry, thanks for joining us on Box to Box for the first time, mate. Hopefully we'll be talking to you again as you advance to the round of 16. It seems you've only got to get one more point out of that Urawa Red Wings or Guangzhou Evergrande game in the next two rounds. So good luck with it, mate.
Thank you very much, fellas, and thanks for your time for having me.
Next, Fox Sports, Daniel Garb talking Europe.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
And don't forget to get into Chemist Warehouse to get your flu shot. I got my quadrivalent flu shot yesterday, Edge. I think you said you've already got yours, but a man who probably has got his some time ago, because winter is well and truly over and summer is emerging in the UK. He kicked his career off as the football correspondent for Melbourne sports station SEN, and now he's one of the voices of the game in the UK for all Australian football fans. Great to have you on the show, Daniel.
Thank you for having me. Lovely to be here. Yeah, it's beautiful weather in London town as I speak. A lovely morning and perfect timing for the final 5 weeks of the Premier League season.
So, Daniel Garb, what's your first observations on the Champions League results overnight? Wolfsburg looked like they were in with a real red-hot chance of knocking off Real Madrid, but they couldn't get the job done. Atletico continued the curse of back-to-back chances against Barcelona. Of course, City beat PSG and Bayern too good for Benfica.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story is Atletico Madrid and the way they continue to astound us with their ability to knock off and disrupt that duopoly in Spanish football of Barcelona and Real Madrid. And to knock Barca out is a wonderful achievement. I mean, look, they've got a very good squad as well, Atletico, and they've spent some money too, but it's nowhere near the might of Barca and Real, of course, over the years. And they do it in a different way. I mean, they get the most out of their players. It's a ferocious, tenacious, defensive-driven game plan that is born from a wonderful, fascinating manager in Diego Simeone, who I love what he's doing at Atletico. Everyone does. I'd love to see if he can replicate that at another club, because he's an Atletico boy. He's developed that culture. He's allowed to be his vibrant, aggressive self at Atletico. Would he be afforded the same sort of leeway at another club? That would be fascinating, but that's a matter for another time. Maybe it'll happen in the summer over here if he decides he wants a new challenge. But before then, he's got the Champions League semi-final to deal with, and they are a legitimate chance. I mean, you would not want to come up against Atletico Madrid if you are Real or Bayern Munich or Man City. That is for sure, because you just know you're going to get an absolute workover defensively. And they are just as good a shot of winning this thing as Real and Bayern are, and at the moment, City are fourth favourites.
And I heard a statistic overnight that Atletico ran 12 more kilometres than Barcelona in that game.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise. I mean, they've been doing it for years, and Barca would have known that. And you've got the quality of Suarez, Neymar and Messi. And for the last 20 minutes, I mean, they were almost chucking in long balls. I mean, it wasn't quite route one, but, you know, they were out of options in terms of trying to play their usual free-flowing style of game. Atletico just disrupted them so much that they couldn't get it going in that regard. And they were unlucky at the end, Barcelona. They should have had a penalty in the last couple of minutes, which would have taken it to extra time, but it was a very difficult call for the referees to make. I mean, it was, when you slowed it down and watched the replay, you saw that maybe he was a millimetre inside the box, but you can't really blame the officials at that pace to make the correct call there. It was a pretty tough one. So went to, for them as well, a bit of luck towards the end of the game and against Barcelona, but they certainly deserve their share of luck because they work ever so hard.
And the hero of that day's football, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. Enough been said about him. Manchester City, they did what all, even non-partisan British supporters were hoping that they could do, and advance the reputation of the English game. PSG just disappointing all round. Laurent Blanc out in the quarterfinals, 4 years running now.
Yeah, it is disappointing because they've invested so much money and haven't quite been able to bridge that final frontier in Europe, and neither had Manchester City for some time themselves. It's a big breakthrough for them to get through to the semi-finals. I mean, it's been clouded a little bit, this achievement, by their poor Premier League season, which really isn't good enough with a squad of that quality and all the turmoil there in regards to the change from Pellegrini to Guardiola. Amid all that, they've made the Champions League semis, and if it was a normal situation, it would probably be celebrated a bit more than it is right now. But still, they've broken through mentally, which for them is crucial. I mean, they are viewed as the outsider at this stage, but you know, you wouldn't count them out of taking a big scalp as well with the quality in their squad, the likes of Sergio Aguero, Kevin De Bruyne, who's just a wonderful footballer. I mean,
brilliant goal.
Along with, say, a Paul Pogba. I mean, talking about two of the best young attacking midfielders in the world. I mean, he is every bit as good as anyone else. And why Chelsea let him go still boggles the mind. So on their day, they are able to knock off anyone, but you just worry about the substance and the pedigree in their squad in terms of constantly achieving on the big, big stage compared to the other sides they'll be up against.
You're with Michael Edgley and Rob Gilbert on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio and streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. Let's leave the Champions League, Daniel, for a moment, and let's get into the last five rounds of the Premier League. I mean, the world is captivated by Leicester City's story. We're all waiting for them to falter at some point so we can have a barnstorming finish to the league. What's your opinion? Can Tottenham chase them down?
For me, this week is just absolutely crucial and will be the deciding factor. If they beat West Ham at home, Leicester, then it's done. I think it's over, because then they've got Swansea at home to come. Mm-hmm. And if they can beat West Ham at home this week, I mean, I don't see why they'd have any problems with Swansea at home. And after that, they've just got to win, a minimum, really, because, you know, this is all based on Tottenham winning all their games as well. After that, they just have to win one of their games against Man United away, Everton at home, and then Chelsea away, which he'd back them to do. So, and that's with Tottenham winning all of their matches. So it's set up for them, but this one is a tricky one this weekend. I mean, West Ham had a game in midweek, which takes a bit out of them physically, but they were knocked out of that. So all of a sudden, their attention goes back to the Premier League and trying to make the top four. And they know they need to win all their remaining games in order to do so. They've got a deep squad that they can rotate. They've got some serious quality there. As attacking midfielder in Dimitri Payet, who's been as good as anyone, and the most unique attacking option in the league in Andy Carroll, who in the air just provides you an unplayable threat at times. So they will be a handful for Leicester, who have just been incredible in defence in the last 6 or 7 weeks. I mean, 6 clean sheets in that time, and it's just absolutely incredible. They're doing all they need to do, and it's been fascinating to watch. We'd love the story to roll on, but at the same time, we wouldn't mind a little twist to make it interesting as well. So for me, it all depends on this weekend. They beat West Ham and Tottenham takes advantage. Sorry, lose to West Ham or draw with West Ham and Tottenham takes advantage of Stoke. Then all of a sudden it is all back on. But if they beat West Ham, for me, that is just about curtain.
Daniel, just we're interested to see what you think about the neutral fans, the fans of clubs that are no longer in the running for the title. Is everyone on the Leicester City bandwagon in London? What's the mood in the football community in England at the moment? Is everyone wishing for the fairy tale to happen?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's Tottenham fans now that are against it. Arsenal fans were for a period of time, but they've given up their title ambitions, understandably, now. So they're obviously desperate for Leicester to get the job done, so Tottenham don't. It's really only Spurs fans now that are hoping for them to fall over. Everyone's behind it. Everyone's caught up in the story. I mean, it's been going for a long, long time, so everyone's getting used to it now. But at the same time, the realisation, if it happens, of them winning the Premier League title is just the most unfathomable situation we've ever seen in sport. And everyone is celebrating that. And every week there seems to be a new achievement. I mean, last week they were crowned Champions League qualifiers guaranteed, which is an enormous occasion. You had Ranieri's tears. You had Jamie Vardy passing the 20-goal mark. We had 3 players nominated for Player of the Year this week or yesterday. So there seems to be a new achievement all the time that is being celebrated as part of the Leicester story, and everyone is reveling in it.
And you're across this story of the Hollywood movie script about Jamie Vardy that's being bruited about the UK?
Yeah, it's been bruited about for a while, so we'll have to see what comes of it long term, whether it actually gets up, because of course some of these things can fall over. But I mean, look, there'll be documentaries and movies in one way or shape or form being done about Leicester. It's too good of a yarn for it not to be the case. And if it was to make it all the way to the Hollywood big screen straight away, and if Jamie Vardy's tale is used as the central plot to all of that, then great. My big issue, boys, is a big question is who plays Mark Schwarzer in the movie. I'm thinking thinking maybe Paul Hogan or Gary Sweet.
Is there anything you can do about Kasper Schmeichel and sort of nobble him for one of these last couple of games, just so we can see Mark get out into the pitch at least once during this season?
Well, he'll get a medal anyway, won't he?
It'd be great. I mean, he played a couple of League Cup games early on, but look, I think he's very happy being in the situation that he's in. I'd be very surprised if he played beyond this season. He's out of contract, so it'd be the perfect way to go out with back-to-back titles, really. He was part of the squad, at least, because he was part of the squad for half the season, at least, at Chelsea that won it last season. Even though Jose Mourinho gave him a winner's medal, he'd be ready for a second one, I'm sure, if Leicester decides to hand him one as well, even though he hasn't qualified in terms of games played. But it'd be great to see him out there. Maybe if they wrap it up early, he gets to Guernsey for the final game or two to celebrate it when they're on the party trail. That would be lovely too. But I mean, you can't really argue too much about the way that he's going out, can you, boys?
Absolutely not. What about the other end of the table, Daniel? A huge match this weekend in the relegation stakes. Obviously, Sunderland and Norwich. Can you give us a bit of an insight into the pressure at the bottom end of the table?
Yeah, it's enormous. And all three clubs at the bottom, I mean, Aston Villa's gone, obviously. So it's Newcastle, Norwich and Sunderland fighting it out, and they all lost last weekend. So there's big pressure on them, and no one's really making that break at the moment. This week will be the determining factor, you dare say, because Norwich and Sunderland face each other the early game on Saturday night. If Norwich win, you say that it's just about over for those two teams in the northeast, which would be a massive shake-up for English football if both Sunderland and Newcastle were to get relegated. That would be quite incredible. So, but
and if Middlesbrough came up, Middlesbrough comes up from the championship, it's quite remarkable what's happened up in the northeast.
Yeah, that would change. That would give them some respite at least, because they'd have some sort of representative team there. But if they don't get up, and you've got Sunderland, Newcastle and Middlesbrough all in the Championship. Wow, that would be quite a shock. So this weekend is enormous. And if Norwich win, it's going to be very tough for Sunderland or Newcastle. But if there's a draw on there, all of a sudden those two teams take a hit. Newcastle plays Swansea half an hour later. Newcastle could take advantage of any points drop from those two teams, and all of a sudden it might be back on. But form-wise, it's hard to make a case for the Magpies at the moment, and really the pressure's on Norwich. If they can beat Sunderland, they are just about safe, you would say. That would be an enormous result for them. So it's a big game coming up, first one on Saturday.
Daniel Garb from Fox Sports, mate, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Hopefully we'll get you on again down the track, mate. Your insights are brilliant. You know as much about the game in the UK as anybody these days, and we're watching your star rise and rise, Daniel. So good luck and thank you, mate.
Thank you very much. Very kind. All the best. Have a good show, guys.
Next up, Stoppage Time with Mark Van Aken.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box. Mark Van Aken is in with Stoppage Time. There's 8 minutes to go as the fourth official indicates. Ben Soro Perez is going to join us from the UK.
Well, is he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he definitely is. We've been telling everyone for the last 2 hours that he is, so he is. What's doing, Mark? What have you got for us, brother?
What have we got? Well, China has unveiled this week a strategy to become... China has unveiled a strategy to become a world football superpower by 2050, with plans to get 50 million children and adults playing the game by 2020.
They're going to have to knock that wall down.
I'll tell you what, though, if they're going to be a superpower by 2050 and they're going to do that by 2020, it's going to take them 30 years. Anyway, other targets include having at least 20,000 football training centres and 70,000 pitches in place by 2020. While China excels at the Olympics and Paralympics, it has never, ever qualified for one World Cup. Has only ever qualified for one World Cup, Michael. I'm getting there. In 2002, President Xi Jinping is a football enthusiast and previously said he wants China to win the World Cup in 15 years. So I'm confused. You want to be a superpower by 2050, you want to win the World Cup, which I would have thought would make you a superpower, by 2030.
Well, they're a chance, aren't they, to qualify for Russia. So it'll be interesting to see how they go.
Absolutely. And the plan was, of course, published this week. Interestingly, another code in Australia has got its eye set on China. Let's hear from the PM.
I'm delighted to be here with Gil and Mr. Gui and the Port Adelaide Football Club because we're signing an important agreement this morning. And this will further develop the AFL code in China by supporting school programs, a Chinese national team, competitions within China, and further broadcasting agreements. AFL is the most exciting football code. An enormous field, extraordinary athleticism. It is the leaping, jumping, flying game where the big men fly, as they say, and where possession is everything. Possession is everything. It is a game that moves faster than any other. This is a very exciting day for a very exciting game in the most exciting place in the world. 40 years ago, this great country barely engaged with the global economy. It is a remarkable transformation. And Australia is part of this transformation, and it is wonderful that our national football game is going to be part of it too.
Malcolm.
Sorry, I was just coming off the long run there. Malcolm Turnbull from Point Harper. Possession is everything in the AFL. Because you know what? I'm pretty sure, Michael, in basketball, possession means nothing.
Absolutely nothing, Mark.
Football, possession
matters
means
in AFL.
Nothing. No. Netball, nothing. What a bunch of hubbub-jub. In that breath that I said there, China, a nation of 1.2, 1.3 billion people, where football and basketball, the two round ball codes, are dominant. What is going on here? Port Adelaide announced this game. They're beating their chest. Koshy's getting on with the cash cow, beating his chest about it all. But they don't have an opponent yet, Rob, and they haven't worked out a suitable venue to play at. So
everyone who's ever had a moment in the media has a cringeworthy moment which they wish that they could just wipe off the history books forever. Malcolm's had several. That was one of them.
Malcolm's launched Australia's week in China with the Port Adelaide Football Club. Please.
It's amazing. And look, gents, there's a famous phrase about the Chinese that represents both a problem and an opportunity. Where does that sit for football?
It's a great opportunity for
football. There's another phrase too, Michael. There's a phrase that they use quite a bit. A billion people in China couldn't give a damn. Yes. I reckon that's applicable here. Look, We do. Look, we get a little bit proppy about our game. It is the global game. And, of course, the irony is China, being the world's most populous nation, that they've got billions of people. They can't seem to find 11 that can play football.
There's got to be more than this and that. I think Malcolm's embarrassing moment can be consigned to the scrap heap of history. What else have you got on the news agenda?
Not a lot. So that's why I was trying to drag that out. Embroiled in the Matteo Valbuena sex tape scandal, France forward Karim Benzema will not be selected for Euro 2016. Mm. The player and the French Football Federation confirmed this week. Unfortunately for me and for those who have always backed me and supported me, I will not be selected for Euro, Benzema revealed on his official Twitter account. Moments later, the FFF released a statement confirming that exact thing. Is this right? I mean, I know he's been a twit, but do you miss out on Euro? And also, considering he's still in very good form, old Karim, it's going to hurt France.
What did he do? Yeah, you explain it. What did he do?
Well, I don't know that we can explain it on Family Show. We'll leave the listeners to Google what he did.
Are you
being facetious, Michael?
I think I might be.
Yeah, I disagree with you there, Mark. I think he is going to cop his right whack, and he deserves it. Now, Mark, thank you for stoppage time. That's been wonderful. We've been promising the listeners that Ben Soro Perez will join us on the line from UK. The beauty of this is we've got a really clear line from Brighton and Hove Albion. The Seagulls are one place away, I think, on the championship ladder from going up. So Ben Soro Perez from the UK. G'day, Ben.
Hi, gents. Hello. How are you?
We're pretty good, Ben. Hey, tell us.
I'm pretty excited to be here.
What have you been up to in Brighton and Hove Albion, Ben?
Oh, lots of stuff. Been to the football. Went to the shops yesterday. Got some bread. Some milk. Pretty excited about that.
Ben, you're just an excitable bloke by nature.
I hope people are regulars of the show, Rob, because we're impersonating someone who's not overly famous. So, anyway,
unless they've tuned into episode 22 of Box to Box, I suspect that they may be regulars and they actually do know who Ben Soro Perez is. Ben, tell us about the vibe in Brighton and Hove Albion. The Seagulls are on the verge of going up to the Premier League. How does it feel? Is it almost the same sort of vibe we've been hearing from our Leicester correspondents?
You know, people are pretty excited by it. You know, I'm pretty chuffed, as you can tell. I'm really over the moon, ecstatic about it. Still not sure they're going to do it, Michael. Still not sure about Leicester either. Not convinced. I know they win every week and they never lose, but still not convinced that they're going to win the title, even when they, you know, finish on top. I'm not convinced that they're going to win the title.
Ben, you're known as...
Again, I hope people listen regularly.
They do. I think they do.
To understand the gag.
No, but...
I know you find it quite amusing.
You are the Brighton Hove insider.
The insider. Ben. I don't know what that means, but yeah.
I was going to ask, have you been inside anything in England?
I went inside the shops yesterday, got some bread, bought some milk.
You mentioned that.
Yeah, I got that. It was pretty exciting. I was pretty ecstatic about it. Anyway, Barca lost. Bit upset about that with my dad being a Catalan. But, you know, the highs and lows are pretty similar for me, as you know. Anyway.
You're an emotional guy,
Ben. Do you
want
to ask me about Chemist Warehouse at all?
Well, we know that you shopped at Chemist Warehouse.
They don't have it in Brighton or Hove or Albion.
Not at all. Jeez, Ben. I mean, the sense of excitement and enthusiasm and passion that you bring to Box to Box every week, clearly,
Are you sure I'll be back on the show after this?
Well, we're not real sure, actually, Ben, because...
I reckon Ben might, but I'm not sure about Mark Van Aken, but anyway...
Okay, Mark, we'll come out of your guise of Ben Soro Perez.
No, I'm Ben.
You did
brilliantly. I mention I went to the shops yesterday and got some bread and some milk?
You did mention that.
And I'm ecstatic. And what
I think our listeners have guessed is that Ben Soro Perez didn't answer his phone, so we've put Mark Van Aken, a.k.a.
And we've wasted 2 minutes of your life.
That was Box to Box for another week on NTS News Talk Sport.